It's the Tim Cornwall Show with Joe Santorsa,
bringing you news from the front lines of the battle to restore the soul of America.
And now, here's your host, Tim Cornwall.
Happy holidays, everyone. While Joe and I and the crew are off for the holiday season, I'm reposting our holiday special episodes from previous years. I reposted our first and second ones from 2015 and 2016, and I hope you had a chance to enjoy them. This is our third holiday special from 2017. This is one of my favorites of all the holiday specials because many of our frequent guests on the show told stories of their Christmas holidays while growing up. So I hope you enjoy listening while you're wrapping gifts or doing your holiday baking, and we'll be back with a new episode after the first of the year. Happy holidays, everyone!
And now, the moment we've all been waiting for, that lovely lady herself,
Tim Cornwall.
Who is this?
This is Tim Cornwall.
Tim who? What kind of last name is that? Coriander, what is that?
Mother's here.
Is Tim Cornwall from Tim Calling Ambulance and GoRainbowRadio.com.
The patron saint of the BFO, that would be Mr. Tim Cornwall. Say hi, Tim.
Last and not least is Tim Cornwall from Tim Cornwall, CORRIMAL.com.
Well, everyone, joining me on the show today is the one and only Omar from the other O. Say hi, Omar.
Hola, chicos.
So, what's going on up in Chicago?
Well, I'm actually in Fort Lauderdale. Actually, I'm in a little town called Plantation, Florida, which is north of Miami.
I had sex with somebody who used to live in Plantation, Florida.
Well, that's interesting because I haven't really seen a homosexual in these parts at all.
So what do you like best about my show, Omar?
I like that it's 20 minutes long.
Oh, so you do know who this is then. Okay.
I do.
Hey there, everyone.
Come on. I was sitting there. I had dinner tonight, and I'm on a business trip, so, of course, I'm eating by myself. And I'm eating. I went to this little sushi place, and I'm sitting down, and this cruise ship filled with sushi lands on this table to the right of me, and there was a guy sitting there, big fatty, that was twice as big as you are.
Oh. So it was Andy Vera.
That's true. Maybe they were together. I don't know. The other lady did look a little homely, but she has a great show.
Well, Tim, I just wanted to say hello, and I'll let you and Omar chit-a-chat. But anyway, because, I'm Big Fatty from Big Fatty Online, and I'm an internet what am I?
Internet,
I'm an internet
porn star?
Celebrity.
You're an internet porn star.
Have I done enough penance with you this week? I mean.
Well, I did get your Christmas card.
Did you like it?
I did. It's the nastiest one I've gotten so far.
Oh, do tell.
Well, that was kind of the goal.
Well, I told it on my show, Tim. Are you
I
not
know,
listening?
I did hear, but, there may be listeners who need to come on over and check out the BFO, the Big Fatty Online.
Well, Omar sent me a Christmas card that you put over your light switch, and it's of a snowman, and so that the light switch, you flip it, and it's his weenie.
It's his weenie.
Well, right, because the carrot's on his nose, so.
There you go.
Anyway, it's your way, it's a way to turn on your favorite snowman or something. I don't know.
I'm your snowman, baby.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
I'm your snowman, baby. My icicles will make you scream. I'm your snowman, baby. You're cold as ice, so we're the perfect team. Don't fall for a flake. That Frosty's a phony. My ride is smooth, just like a Zamboni. I'm your snowman, baby. You'll want a taste of this ice cream. I'm your snowman, baby. Get yourself a freaky frozen thrill. I'm your snowman, baby. Let's take your toboggan down a hill.
Snowman, baby.
I've seen the forecast. It's the perfect gift. 8 inches overnight. If you catch my drift, I'm your snowman, baby. The harder it blows, the lower the wind chill. I'm your snowman, baby. Roads are slippery, so the going is slower. I'm your snowman, baby. I get deeper when the temperature's lower. Out in the cold, after snow falls, the perfect time to play with my snowballs. I'm your snowman, baby, and you can be my snowblower. Hey, baby. Yeah, you wanna get your driveway plow? Oh yeah, I can salt it too, baby. Oh yeah, clean your sidewalk all the way to your back door. I'm your snowman, baby. You got me working up a sweat. I'm your snowman, baby, and when I melt, you're gonna get wet. Grab my carrot and give it a yank. I'll make a deposit in your snowbank. I'm your snowman, baby, and now you know that you've been frostbit.
This is Justice Putnam. In the 2 weeks preceding Christmas of 1974, as a 19-year-old, not knowing any better, I hitchhiked across America from California to go to New York and meet some friends from college, whereupon I was to accompany them to their family's holiday gathering in Connecticut. I arrived in New York on Christmas Eve. And it was a rather chilly and bitter night, and I'd never been to New York before. And the result of that visit is the following poem that at one point became a song lyric that I performed quite frequently. This is called A Christmas Story, 1974. There is a crying, and it comes from behind this door. And the snows blow through this shattered skylight. I've been stumbling, taking steps with the stinking drunks. It is Christmas morning, and it is still dark. I have heard the sirens. People die on Christmas even. We have a tree, but nobody can show me where is God. Yesterday, a policeman's brain was smeared on the broken stained glass. I wonder what his kids got from Santa. And I watched an old black man. He had bled dead red in the snow. My God, that still happens, you know. Well, the lady upstairs had a baby, so they say. Born on the floor, the dogs and the rats were watching. Everybody said, what a healthy boy, but I sit down here and I wonder how. I think that she named him Jesus. Because there is a crying, and it comes from behind this door, and the snows blow through this shattered skylight. And I've been stumbling, taking steps with the stinking drunks. It is Christmas morning, still dark.
Charm for me, get sicker of them every year. Shopping's a calamity. When December comes, I want to disappear. But part of me is still a kid. What lifts me up and always did? Houses wrapped in Christmas lights. In the glow. Diamonds in the Christmas night. My Christmas story. I'm Francie 57 for Tim Cormall Show. My story is from 1963, and 1963, a lot of stuff happened in the world. On the world stage, our beloved president was assassinated. I was in first grade. I was six, and all I remember was everybody was very sad and crying. In our house, Mom was expecting baby number five. And I was the oldest, and I had three brothers already, so I asked Santa Claus for baby sister. Okay, so Christmas time comes around the 22nd. Dad takes Mom to the hospital to have the baby, and she comes home Christmas Eve, and I'm all excited. The baby was so cute, la la la, and Mother said, "Here is your new baby father." Wah, wah. Not happy. This six-year-old was not happy. I had a bunch of brothers. I wanted a sister for Christmas. Okay, so Christmas Day comes, and the tree is beautiful. There's toys and stuff all over the floor, and I spy with my little eye this blue bike. It was a big blue bike, and it was against the wall behind the tree, and I'm saying, it gotta be for me, you know, it has to be. So I look at the tag, yes, it's for me. And it was a beauty. It had streamers, it was metallic blue, it was a Columbia bike, it had a beautiful blue and white seat. It was the bee's knees, it was awesome. I couldn't wait to ride that bike. Well, I had to wait. Had to wait until, you know, the spring thaw, whatever. And when I did ride that bike the first time, Dad took movies, and I'm riding like the wind up and down the street. The bike, I couldn't even sit on the seat, but that was okay. I had that bike for many years. I loved that bike. It was awesome. And that is my Christmas story. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, season's greetings, and happy, happy, merry, merry to all, and to all a good night.
It's the time of year when you start to hear something floating in the air. A peculiar sound bouncing all around, merry carols everywhere. In each store and mall, every street and hall, even on the radio. It's an endless tape that you can't escape, any blasted place you go. I hate holiday music. I hate holiday music. All that cheesy chipper chirping all day long would make me feel a bit bluish, even if I weren't Jewish. And I will scream if I hear one more Christmas song. It's an annual curse, getting worse and worse with the spread of red and green. Jingling in the air, carols start to blare the day after Halloween. At the strangest times, I start hearing chimes, harps and bells that ding-a-ling. I'm already vexed, then oh no, what's next? Perry Como starts to sing. I hate holiday music. I hate holiday music. All that cheesy chipper chirping all day long would make me turn a bit shrewish, even if I weren't Jewish. And I will scream if I hear one more Christmas song. Every semi-celebrity has a holiday CD. Christmas Eve with Kenny G, it's not my thing. And I don't need to see Celine Dion's Family Christmas on TV. I'm not dreaming of a white Christmas, 'cause I'm even sick of Bing. I hate holiday music. I hate holiday music. All that cheesy chipper chipping all day long would make me start to unglue-ish, even if I weren't Jewish. And I will scream if I hear any more sleigh bells ring, but I'm not listening. I will scream if I hear any more, oh, Santa baby, so hurry before. I will scream if I hear anyone sing, Grandma got run over by a reindeer. No more good King Wenceslas or jolly old Saint Nick. Up on the housetop, I'm going to be sick of angels we have heard on high. Tell the silver bells goodbye, not one more cheerful earful.
Joined a wonderful party with Christmas and tree. Dearest friends were all there and all filled with glee. 'Twas late evening now, 10 p.m. did it be. So quick like a ghost, L.A. I did flee. I drove through the night up lonely I-5. A cold bitter night I did drive and did drive. Arrived back in Davis at 2:45 and opened the door to my horror, you'll see. The odor was potent and hurt my poor head. I exclaimed and exclaimed, and I said, I think that one of my roommates is dead. I ran through the house, a cold solar home, to find that in truth I was really alone. While away, Roger thought, why not save us a fee? He decided to save us some electricity. He knew it was smart, and he knew it was keen, to unplug the fridge, 'cause it's empty and clean. His mind was so sharp, like a 100-year geezer, 'cause you see, he didn't bother to empty the freezer. Green gook oozed on down from the top to the bottom and smelled as if Satan had brewed something rotten. So out to the back, the fridge I did drag, and at 20 degrees washed with hose and a rag. The house was so cold with the windows all open, the heat override, it was actually broken. So sleep tried I did under piles of clothes, every blanket and jacket but froze did my toes. The moral, there is none. I was sick for a week, all because of my roommate, the geek.
On Hanukkah, you want some food that's hearty, a simple meal that shouldn't lead to stress. I tried to make some latkes for my party, but all I wound up making was a mess. I grated the potatoes and I drained them. I mixed them up and seasoned them just right. But all the frying pans where I contained them just splattered oil everywhere in sight. Now there's oil on my counter, oil on the floor, oil on the stovetop, every skillet, and what's more, the smell is just disgusting and it stays and stays. My house will smell like rancid oil for days and days and days and days and days and days and days. Oh, latkes, schmatkes, they're harder than you think. Oh, latkes, schmatkes, just throw them in the sink. I tried them, I fried them, they're heavier than lead. Why can't we eat potato chips instead? Hey! Oil on the ceiling, oil on the wall, all around the stove and sink and even down the hall. I know that it's tradition and I tried until it hurt, but they still look and taste like deep fried dirt. Oh, latkes, schmatkes, they're harder than you think. Oh, latkes. latkes, schmatkes, just throw them in the sink. They're rotten, verboten, but latkes we will eat. Boy, 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 boy. Cause they sell them at the deli down the street. Yes, we're gonna start cavelling, cause they sell them at the deli down the street. It's swell, the deli down the street. Hey! Hey everyone in the Tim Cormel family, this is Lauren Mayer here. I am the show's resident opinionated Jewish mother, and I know that's redundant, and comedy songwriter. And I wanted to just share a couple of memories of what it's like to be Jewish during the Christmas holidays. Because we're definitely in the minority, but I don't mind since as a musician, I do make a lot of money playing Christmas carols and doing Christmas music. So I have nothing against Christmas, but for those of you who have said happy holidays, thank you. I really appreciate it. When I was growing up in Orange County, California, there were even fewer Jews than Democrats. But I'm bummed. Cue the rim shots here. And so when I was asked to explain to my fourth grade class what Hanukkah was, one of my classmates raised his hand and said, oh, he understood Hanukkah. It was a holiday celebrating potato chips. It took me a second, but I realized that was sort of an odd association with latkes and potato chips. Anyway, Hanukkah is a minor holiday. And as a musician, like I said, I've been happy to play lots of Christmas parties. One of my first professional Christmas gigs was singing a cappella Christmas carols in the shoe department at Lord & Taylor in Manhattan. I sang with an a cappella trio, and we were in the shoe department, men's shoes. And this very well-dressed, what seemed middle-aged man walked up to us and said, you girls are really good. And we're sort of... thank you, and, you know, just is he hitting on us or just complimenting us? And he said, no, I really know what I'm talking about. I'm in the business. I was the Indian from the Village People. At that point, I knew my career was made. Well, sort of. When I had children of my own, I had been married at the time to a man who had grown up Catholic and did not want anything religious, so we just had a Christmas tree and a menorah. But I wanted to make sure my kids understood what the significance of the holiday was. Hanukkah is an extremely minor holiday in the hierarchy of Jewish holidays, but Christmas is kind of the big one for Christians. So I asked my older son if he understood what the holiday was about, and he said, oh yeah, Mom, Christmas is the birthday of Santa Claus. So we had to have a little bit of a talk about that one so that he understood what it really was. My current mother-in-law, I married another Catholic boy, and his mom had never known anybody Jewish before, really well, before he married me. And she loves to go to those holiday craft fairs where people do all sorts of crafts and fun things. And every year she would send me something with dreidels and menorahs on it. I have a Hanukkah table runner. I have Hanukkah tea towels. I have Hanukkah hostess towels. I have Hanukkah coasters. She even found little Hanukkah teddy bears to send my children when they were little. And several years ago, I recorded an album of Hanukkah comedy songs, and I wanted to joke about the ridiculous things that people give you when they don't know anything about Hanukkah. I tried to think, okay, what's something my mother-in-law would never send? Because I didn't want her to be offended and think that the song was about her, even though it sort of was. So I put in a line about a potholder shaped like a dreidel, because I figured that's so out there. And guess what I got from her the following year from Hanukkah? A potholder shaped like a dreidel. So anyway, but I really appreciate the thought, and just the fact that she went to all that trouble was wonderful. And likewise, I appreciate everybody in the Tim Cormel community. You've been so supportive for me this entire year in supporting my songs and helping me out when I was sick over the summer. So happy holidays and Merry Christmas. Happy Kwanzaa. Happy Hanukkah. Happy whatever you celebrate. And I will see you, or at least talk to you all, in the new year. Bye.
Sometimes it can be difficult to be a Jew. Our holidays confuse folks. Heck, they confuse me too. But now I've heard 9 little words to explain each holiday nice and neat. They tried to kill us. We survived.
Let's eat.
They tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat.
We've got a lot of holidays, both big and small, and not even a rabbi can define them all.
So when in doubt, you just set out, chop liver and something sweet and say, they tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat. Yes, we survived.
We survived.
And even thrived.
Even thrived.
Maybe that's why Jews have so much drive. So when in doubt, you just set out, chop liver and a little something sweet and say, they tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat.
They tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat.
There's Rosh Hashanah, Hanukkah, Pesach, Shavuot, Simchat Torah, Purim, Tu Bishvat, and Sukkot, Lag BaOmer, Tisha B'Av. That list is not complete. Oh well.
They tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat.
Now Tu Bishvat's about trees, and Simchat Torah's about Torah. Passover is Pesach, New Year's is Rosh Hashanah. On Purim we eat Hamantaschen to celebrate how brave Queen Esther saved the Jews and engineered Haman's defeat because he tried to kill us, etc. Yes, we survived.
We survived.
And that's no
jive. No,
now it's time for all our cousins to arrive. On each occasion, simply say to every goy you meet, happy they tried to kill us.
We survived. Let's eat.
Oh, we survived. We're still alive. Come give your cousin Mordecai a high five. Oh, each holiday is always such a treat. They tried to kill us. We survived. Let's eat.
They tried to kill us. We survived. Let's eat.
They tried to kill us. Oh yeah, we survived it all.
Yes.
So come on, celebrate and eat. You look hungry. Have a little noodle kugel.
A lot of men get in trouble for giving practical gifts to the women in their lives at Christmas. As an adult, I've never made the mistake of giving my life partner a vacuum cleaner, or an electric can opener, or a washing machine. And for that, I have to thank my mother. She taught me long ago that giving a practical gift to a woman at Christmas was definitely not the way to go. Let me take you back to North London, 1968. I was 5 years old. My mum had taken my older brother and me to the local Woolworths store to do some Christmas shopping. And for the first time, I was given some pocket money to buy presents for my family. It was my first real experience having money to spend on other people. And, as a precocious little kid who thought he could do math well, I was excited by the challenge of working within the budget I had been given. My brother and I ran around the store looking for ideas. First, he and I decided what to buy each other, spending equal amounts on each other so we didn't feel ripped off, a tradition we maintained for many years thereafter. I bought him some Lego or something similar. And then I bought my dad his gift, a mass-market paperback, one of the kind of thrillers he used to enjoy in those days. I also got a little baby toy for my annoying new baby brother. But when I added it all up, I realized I had spent practically all my money without giving a thought to my mum. If I paid for all the things in my basket, I would have threepence. We still used the old Charles Dickens money of pounds, shillings, and pence in those days. That was all I would have left to buy a gift for my mum. I looked up and down the store trying to find something that I could buy for her without going over the strict budget she had given me. Her plan was to let me and my brother pay with the money she had given us, so the gifts would be a surprise come Christmas Day. Miraculously, I found something for my mum, and my brother and I bought our products, took them home, wrapped them up, and handed them out on Christmas Day. I was particularly excited about the genius gift I had chosen for my mum, with the threepence I had to spend on her. It was a small box, but very carefully wrapped. She shook it, and it rattled a little. They do say good things come in small packages, she said. I know, I told her confidently. She unwrapped it slowly to reveal a small cardboard box. On the outside, printed in large letters that filled the whole lid of the little box, were the words, 1,000 pins. My mum looked at me suspiciously. I sensed something was wrong. Pins, she said. You gave me pins? I felt myself blush, not quite sure what I had done wrong. But there's 1,000, I said, trying to sell her on the idea. 1,000 pins, she said, in a way that made me realize that the quantity of pins I had secured for her was perhaps not such a positive. That's right, and it only cost me 3 pence, I said, still trying to convince her what a bargain I had found. Pins, she said again. What am I going to do with pins? I learned a lot about gift-giving that day, and I cried a little. But I learned that when a woman tells you it's the thought that counts in relation to the gift you have just given her, it means you've given her a shitty gift. I'm not sure how long my mom teased me about this. It may have been a few days or a couple of weeks, but at that age it felt like years. She would look at me and shake her head and quietly whisper, "You gave me pins." So that's why I've never given a hairdryer or a crock pot to my life partner for Christmas. And I guess I have my mum to thank.
This Christmas with our adorable collection of Christmas tree light bulb soaps. Clean yourself from head to foot with O Little Soap of Bethlehem soap set. This and other holiday treats only from the mad minds at Bubble Genius.
BubbleGenius.com.
Hi, this is Tim Cormall.
And this is Joe Santorsa from the Tim Cormall Show.
And we'd like to wish everyone at Indie Media Weekly a very happy holiday season.
Whoa, wait. Our orange overlord said we now have to say Merry Christmas.
Aw, crap. Let's try that again. You know what? Screw that. Melakaliki Maka, everyone!
Which means Merry Christmas, but since we still have the First Amendment around, Happy Holidays, everyone! Yeah!
You're a mean one. Mr. Trump, you really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus, you're as charming as an eel, Mr. Trump. You're an orange clown with a nasty appeal. You're a monster, Mr. Trump. Your heart's an empty hole. Your brain is full of greed, and you have Wall Street in your soul, Mr. Trump. I wouldn't touch you with a 39.5-foot pole. You're a foul one, Mr. Trump. You have racist in your smile. You have all the tender sweetness of a grand wizard's smile, Mr. Trump. Given a choice between the two of you, I wouldn't take either one of you. You're rotten, Mr. Trump. You're the king of sinful sauce. Your heart's a dead tomato splotched with moldy purple spots, Mr. Trump. You're a three-decker sauerkraut and toastal sandwich with arsenic sauce. You nauseate me, Mr. Trump. With a nauseous super nos. You're a crooked, dirty jockey, and you are a crooked boss, Mr. Trump. Your soul is an appalling dump, heap overflowing with the most disgraceful assortment of rubbish imaginable, mangled up in a tangle of knots. You're a vile one, Mr. Trump. You're a nasty skunk. Your heart is full of unwashed socks. Your soul is full of gunk, Mr. Trump. The three words that best describe you are as follows, and I quote, stink, stank, stunk.
Hi, this is Kenny Pick, and I want to wish everybody a happy holiday season. And it's very important that I say happy holidays to everybody right now because of the story I want to tell you. I grew up in rural Ohio, and around the age of 7 or 8 years old, my parents and I went to an auction, and there were some lovely horses that were up for auction. Retired polo horses, to be exact. And my mom fell in love with one of the horses, and she bought this animal that was named Jenny and saved her from a fate of probably ending up in a can of dog food, because that's what people would go to these auctions would do. They didn't want a retired polo horse as a pet or something to, you know, casually ride. They just wanted meat for the grindhouse. I'm sorry to be so graphic, but that's exactly what would have happened. Now, mind you, we did not live on a farm, and I didn't completely understand exactly what was going on. We had a horse, but we couldn't take it home. Well, my mom and dad were friends with a family who owned a farm and had some open stables, and had been known to board other people's horses there. And they had an enormous pasture and a beautiful house. And so we rented from them a stable for our horse, Jenny. I learned a lot of valuable lessons on this farm. And the family there was wonderful. It was a husband, wife, and two daughters. And they had a son who had been tragically killed in a car accident as a young man. On this family farm, I learned what an electric fence was, because I touched a wire trying to climb through to the pasture where the horses and cows were, and then I woke up on my back to see the blue sky above. And I noticed there was a box, a power box, on this fence post that said bulldozer. Well, that doesn't mean a earth-moving piece of equipment. It means it will put a bull to sleep. And yes, it put me to sleep. And I learned my lesson from that. I also learned some other lessons, and one really important lesson I want to get to. At one point, I ended up buying a pony from one of the daughters of the family. I think I paid $20 for the pony. I know everybody's really jealous, but guess what? The pony hated me. But that's beside the point. I competed in 4-H with this pony, whose name was Little Mare. I didn't get to pick a name because she was already named by the time I bought her. At one 4-H competition, I was there with my sister and the two daughters from the family that we boarded the horses with. I don't know if anybody's ever been to a county fair, but there are strange little exhibits that are put on by certain groups, and there was one that seemed really interesting and fun. And at the time, I was, I guess, sort of a passive Christian for being, you know, going to church and, you know, knowing the songs about baby Jesus and all that stuff. And, you know, and I did have a modest Christian upbringing as a child. Well, one of these displays at the county fair had, for the lack of a better term, a peanut gallery. And it had these little viewers that you could look in, and it would magnify scenes reenacted by still life peanuts from the Bible. I know it sounds weird, but basically I was looking at little biblical dioramas with peanuts with Google eyes on them, and it was a Christian group, and then what they would do is they would give you literature after you looked, and you read the stories, and ogle the peanuts, and you could then, you know, go to their church or give them money or whatever. And at one point, in the van on the way home with everybody else from 4-H, I was talking to the younger daughter of the family where we boarded our horses, and I told her about these really nice people and the peanut people that they had in the little boxes that you could go and look at, and it was about Jesus and stuff like that. And I thought it was really neat. And she gave me a look that I'll never forget. And it was It was a look of sadness like I've never seen as a 7-8-year-old child. It was a look of not this again. And I think you probably know where this is going. So a few months go by, winter rolls around, and we're at the family who's boarding our horse's house. And I'm looking around, and I asked the same daughter about the little Christian peanut thingy. I asked her, I said, "Where's your Christmas tree?" And she looked at me and said, "I'm Jewish." And she got a really sad look on her face, and she ran out of the room. And I felt like somebody punched me in the gut. I didn't understand what was going on. I didn't know what Jewish meant. Again, I was a passive little pseudo-Christian kid that had secondhand information from TV specials and kids at school and the few church appearances I made for holidays. I didn't understand anything that was going on. So later on, I talked to my mom about this encounter with the family's youngest daughter. And I said, I don't know why I upset her. I asked her where her Christmas tree was, and she ran out of the room after she told me she was Jewish. And she said, Jewish people celebrate differently, and they believe differently. This was all new territory for me. I barely understood what Christianity was all about. Santa Claus was a bigger figure in my life than Jesus ever was. So when I thought about Christmas and a Christmas tree, I just thought about people getting together and giving gifts and, most importantly, getting gifts because I was a selfish little cuss. So after a little more explanation, my mom suggested to me that I wish people happy holidays. This was before the PC movement. This was before the fake war on Christmas that Fox News prattles on about. This was before Donald Trump and the fake story that he allows people now to say Merry Christmas. It's not about allowing. It's not about a war on Christmas. It's not about being politically correct. It's about being polite to friends, to family, to strangers, to anyone. People can wish me a Merry Christmas. I'm an atheist now. It doesn't bother me, but I often think, should I say Happy Hanukkah back? But every time somebody wishes me a Merry Christmas, I think about this story and the sadness I inflicted upon a friend. And I wish I had known better then, but I can't change that. So all I can say is I'm glad I know better now. And I want to say thank you, Tim Cormel, for letting me do this little story on the show. And happy holidays to everybody who's listening.
How does Santa know which chimneys to skip when he makes that trip that never stops at our house? Gee, I bet a tree would be more fine than a menorah. Here we go. Once more, it's hard to be different. How does Santa know it isn't our day? We don't celebrate the same as everyone else. When my friends start caroling, the songs don't sound familiar. Guess they never will. It's hard to be different. Sometimes they pretend they want to be my friend so they can say I'm even nice to one of those. Do come over now and then, but I suppose you'd feel funny at our parties, heaven knows. Why does Santa think I don't deserve gifts as he carefully sifts
through names of good girls and boys. Hanukkah is lots of fun, but stores don't recognize it. Guess it's no surprise they don't realize I hate being different. Nobody likes different. It's hard to be different like me.
Christmas is a time for family traditions, long-awaited reunions, and sometimes unexpected events. Our family was no different, and so each year we would anxiously anticipate the event of winter, when my mother would roll up her sleeves and mix the dough to her famous homemade bread. She was a perfectionist, and every detail of the bread had to be perfect. After all, it was not only used for Christmas Day dinner, but it was also a cherished gift. It was wrapped in ribbons and given to friends and neighbors. To my mother, it was not only important for the bread to taste delicious, but also that it looked like it just fell out of a Norman Rockwell painting. And so it was one year that my mother's first batch of bread, while totally perfect in taste and texture, didn't pass the Norman Rockwell test. Now for my mom, this was an inconvenience that required the disposal of the unacceptable batch and the creation of a new one. But the disposal part was not that easy. You see, my Aunt Carmela, who lived with us, was the oldest of the family. She remembered the Depression in its harshest terms and how hard it was to come by food, including perfectly good loaves of bread. "Don't you dare throw out that bread," she scolded my mother. "It's perfectly fine and they will eat it." Now, my mother was not one to take direction easily, but she wanted to avoid the wrath of her older sister at Christmas. So, she enlisted me to dispose of the offending loaves near an old pine tree in our backyard. It was out of sight, to shield it from Aunt Carmela's probing eyes and suspicious nature. And as an added benefit, it would be a perfect gift for the birds in the winter. That Christmas day, as every Christmas before, we all sat around the huge table in our dining room for a wonderful feast that included Aunt Carmela's homemade ravioli, Italian-style chicken, and of course, my mother's bread looking like it was painted by Rockwell himself. Our dining room featured a picture window, which, for you millennials, that would be like a 90-inch flat-screen TV, but with the real world on the other side. The meal was going nicely, well, as nicely as an Italian family meal could go. There was the usual talking over each other and shouting and grumbling about the state of the world when suddenly, my mother turned pale, white, as she looked out of the window. There, in our neighbor's driveway, was a gray squirrel. Now you may ask, what would the appearance of a common gray squirrel make my mother's color as white as the snow on the other side of the window? The answer was that the squirrel was dragging down the driveway the evidence to indict my mother for the crime of wasting food. Yes, he was dragging one of the discarded loaves of bread and exposing my mother as a criminal food waster in the eyes of my aunt prosecutor. Aunt Carmela shot an evil eye across the table and barely missed the rest of us in the crossfire. "You threw out that bread, Jane." The accusation quieted the rest of the table as we all waited for my mother's defense. But Mom, never at a loss for quick thinking, pleaded not guilty and said, he must have stolen it when I was cooling it on the back porch." We all laughed, knowing full well that my mother did, but Aunt Carmela, who remained unconvinced, quietly finished her meal. After all, she would never waste food. As a footnote, we once took a loaf of my mother's bread and covered it with shellac to preserve it for a time when she would not be around. Although she left us many years ago, I still have that loaf today, and it is truly a work of art.
I think for me, Christmas is an interesting time of year. Working in broadcasting, it's always very busy for me because there's a lot of things going on during the Christmas time. So usually I spend Christmas Eve, me and my girlfriend, that's when we have our Christmas dinner and exchange gifts. And our Christmas dinner is, our traditional Christmas dinner is vegan Korean tacos. That's right. That's our traditional Christmas dinner. And so we have dinner and then we exchange gifts. And then the next day on Christmas Day, we go and we go to different cities to see our family. She goes to one city in North Carolina, I go to another. And the reason why we do it like that is it just covers more ground, you know. It's just over the years, you know, certain family members are used to seeing us, so we just kind of do it that way. And, you know, I really enjoy seeing my nephews and watching them grow up and hanging out with them and, you know, seeing them develop and evolve as, you know, young men is really good. And that's how we spend Christmas. So another thing I do at Christmas time with work, and one of the reasons why it's so busy, is because I work with NORAD in regards to military public affairs, and they do a thing where they track Santa Claus. And the whole thing started like in the 50s when somebody was doing a phone bank for children to call into the North Pole and answer their questions about the elves and Santa and the reindeer and all that. And anyway, on the flyer that was distributed, they screwed up the number, the phone number, and they end up calling NORAD instead of this phone bank. And so the thing is, the guys at NORAD were like, they just ran with it. They're like, not only did they give them, you know, answers to questions about Santa and the reindeers, they also took it a step further and they said, yes, we're using our equipment to track Santa and keep him safe. And ever since then, they've been doing that every year. They've made it part of a PR campaign to outreach to civilians to show, you know, a lighter side of the military. And so they do it nowadays, and nowadays they do it with social media, and they have computer animations that show Santa flying around all the different cities. And my piece in this is I help to coordinate and technically facilitate the interviews that go on between the senior leaders at NORAD and all the different military, or I should say all the different media outlets that want to call in and do interviews on Christmas Eve to find out how they are indeed tracking Santa. And I know it's kind of silly and kind of ridiculous, but it's fun. It's just something that we've been doing for years, and we're happy to be a part of it. It's good, clean fun, and I think it's fun for the kids. And occasionally some of the calls get through to me, and, you know, the kids are, to hear them ask about Santa and the reindeer, and they'll believe anything you tell them, you know, and they'll just go with it. And so I've actually had to field a few calls myself in regards to children wanting to know about Santa. But more often than not, I'm too busy on the technical side of it, and I just have to refer them to the proper phone number. But that's something that I've been doing for many years now, and helping to work with that, get the satellite coordinates for the interviews, coordinating the media outlet with the people on the ground in Colorado Springs, where NORAD is based, so that the generals and the different people can actually do the interviews. And I think the thing that amazes me the most about it is just how straight-faced these generals and senior leaders are when they talk about Santa Claus and when they talk about the effort that is put forth in tracking Santa through the sky. They say that now even he has an escort of F-15s to make sure, you know, he's safe. And they put a lot of thought and effort into this, and they try to make it fun for the kids. So that's a Christmas memory that I have that I think is fun and is something I do every year. It takes a lot of work and a lot of effort, and it takes up a lot of my time on Christmas Eve, but it's rewarding. You know, I'm glad to do it.
Oh. Hark how the bells, sweet silver bells, all seem to say, throw cares away, Christmas is here, bringing good cheer to young and old. Ding dong, ding dong, that is their song, with joyful ring, all caroling, one seems to hear words of good cheer from everywhere, filling the air. Oh, how happy are their tones. Merry, merry, merry Christmas. Merry, merry, merry Christmas. While people sing songs of good cheer, Christmas is here, on they stand, on without end, their joyful tone to every home. Hark how the bells, sweet silver bells, all seem to say, throw cares away, Christmas is here, bringing good cheer to young and old, meek and the bold. On they send, on without end, their joyful tone to every home.
Hey everyone, this is Tim Cormall. I don't really talk much about my family on the show, so I thought I'd share some Christmas memories from days past. My father was born in 1917, and he grew up the son of a construction working father and a stay-at-home mother. My grandfather taught my father how to do construction work, but due to the Great Depression, he ended up serving in the Civilian Conservation Corps camps when he was a teenager. The Civilian Conservation Corps, or CCC, was a public works relief program that operated from 1933 to 1942 in the United States for unemployed, unmarried men to help out families as part of the New Deal during the Great Depression. My father told me many stories about his times in the CCC camps. One of my favorite stories was when he and his camp members went to the cemetery on Halloween, and some of the guys in his camp put pillowcases on their hands and hid behind gravestones to scare the rest of the members of the camp. He told me that story many times, and we always laughed about it. My father served for many years as a radar technician for the U.S. Navy, and including his service during World War II, he served 10 years active duty and 20 years reserve duty. After he was discharged from active duty, he went on to become a Southern Baptist minister at several churches in South Texas. My father married his first wife when he was a young man and had three sons, my older half-brothers. In 1960, his first wife passed away from a rare liver disease called Bright's disease. In 1964, he married my mom, Mary, and it was a big deal with everyone in the family and community for a 46-year-old man to marry a 25-year-old woman. It will never work, they said, but they were wrong. They all eventually got over it after the marriage, and I was born 2 years later in 1966. My younger brother was born in 1971. My mom, Mary, was a stay-at-home mom and raised my brother and I along with my father as a minister while he finished out his 30 years of service in the U.S. Navy so he could retire. I remember going places with my dad as a young child, and when everyone thought he was my grandfather, he would look down his glasses at them and say, "This is my son," to which there was always nervous laughter and apologies. There are so many holiday memories of my parents over the years that I don't have time to share, but I will share this one. Every year we would pull out and put together the artificial Christmas tree and decorate it as a family. At the end of the holiday season, my mom would say, "Save the tinsel," which we called icicles in the South. And after all the ornaments were on the tree, my younger brother would take the old wrinkled old tinsel and put it on the branches in big clumps on the tree. As a young gay man, I stood in horror and had to go and pull each strand of silver tinsel out of the clumps to fix it. Looking back on it all, my brother and I laugh about it to this day. My father passed away at age 90 in January 2008, and my mother passed away at age 78 in October of last year, 2016. And my brother and I interred their ashes together at a veterans cemetery in Corpus Christi, Texas, just before Christmas in December of last year. My parents were both Democrats, until they got tricked by Ronald Reagan when he brought the Southern Christian evangelical leaders into the Republican Party while he was in office. They became Republicans and voted against their best interest in every election until they passed away. I didn't have a grandmother on my father's side, as she was unfortunately killed in a car accident many years before I was born. But the reason I'm giving you the background story of growing up in my family is because of one grandmother I had on my mother's side of the family. She was the best grandmother I could have in my life, and I wanted to share what she lived through along with my mom and dad's story. My grandfather was a cotton farmer in Texas, and he married my grandmother when she was 17 years old. Her name was Tercy. They had 12 children, one of which passed away at birth. So my mom had 10 siblings, and there are currently only 4 of my aunts and uncles left living to this day. My grandfather had a nervous breakdown and almost shot one of my aunts with a shotgun when she was coming home from a date one evening, and ended up in a mental institution for the rest of his life in the early 1960s. After my grandfather was placed in the institution, my grandmother was left with paying the expenses of her home, and she was the one we visited as a kid each Christmas. I remember that my grandmother always had a string of bubble lights on her Christmas tree that I loved, but half of them didn't work. But it was always a joy to see the bubble lights and wait to see for some reason some of them might actually start working, which they never did. My grandmother lived on her Social Security benefits, and she used to save her pennies all year so that she would have something to give as gifts to her many grandchildren when we were all growing up, as that was all she had to give us. Every Christmas, she would go to the bank and cash in her pennies for dollar bills and give each grandchild $1 for Christmas. Now, mind you, this was in the 70s, so $1 could actually be a lot of money at that time, but our parents, aunts, and uncles used to joke that the money she gave us was burning a hole in your pocket, as my cousins and I couldn't wait to get to the convenience store and gas station on the corner to buy a Coke and some candy with the money Grandma gave us every year. My grandmother passed away in 1986, and every time at Christmas, I remember how much I loved her and how much it meant for me for that $1 she saved for me and her other grandchildren. She gave out of the love all that she had to give. That is what the magic of Christmas is all about. Happy holidays, everyone. I'd like to take a moment to thank Justice Putnam, Francie, Don, who's T4BooBoo on Twitter, The Daily Edge, Lauren Mayer, Kenny Pick, Seth, who's SethP23 on Twitter, and Joe for taking the time during this busy holiday season to record their stories for this special. I'd also like to thank Joe, my co-host, co-producer, and resident Photoshop expert, for all of his help with the show, as well as all the many guests who join us every week on the show. I couldn't do this show without their help. And finally, I'd like to thank all of you who take the time to listen to our show. Without you, we would be doing this all for naught. Enjoy your holidays, get some rest, and recharge your batteries, because we must continue the resistance in 2018 and take our country back. Vive la resistance!
If there's a war on Christmas, Christmas is winning, despite the way right-wingers try to warn ya. Every corner of the nation's filled with garish decorations, even godless liberal states like California. Now it matters what you call a day, and when you say happy holiday, I feel included when I hear it. Isn't that the holiday spirit? Oh, if there's a war on Christmas, well, Christmas started it. Actually, it was manufactured by Fox News. They say our country's Judeo-Christian, but the Judeo part is missing. And there's atheists, Muslims, Buddhists, and more, as well as Jews. Each store from Saks Fifth Ave to Osh's blaring carols till I'm nauseous. And the most devout and hip monks feel like strangling those chipmunks.
Christmas, Christmas time is woo!
As for saying Merry Christmas, no one ever stopped it. Despite Trump's lie about the guy before. In fact, there's proof Obama said it, though Trump wants us to forget it. Well, we want to forget his frightening decor. And every year, bizarre schmucks rant about the cups at Starbucks, though you'd think they'd act more shyly since Fox fired Bill O'Reilly. So if there's a war on Christmas, oh, please, who are they kidding? It's divisive, and it keeps us separated. And if the excuse for their unease is their devout respect for Jesus, what about the holiday he celebrated? Saying happy holidays, despite what Trump insists, won't turn us all into evil heathen socialists. The war on Christmas is only in his mind, where it's apparently the only thing you'll find.